Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
Well, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Think Orange podcast, coming to you today from the roaming Think Orange bunker. We are so glad that you're with us. Today, I'm hosting on my own because my good friend Ashley, she's out recording some videos for the Orange crew. And speaking of orange, I wonder, do you all know what the color orange symbolizes and why we use it to influence the next generation? You see, it's the combination of the love of the home, which is symbolized by red, and the light of the church, which we symbolize with yellow, to impact the child's life and faith. Red and yellow coming together to form orange. That's what it's all about. The church partnering with parents to influence a child's life. And that's what we're going to talk about today in our special episode. First, we're going to hear from the founder of Orange himself, Mr. Reggie Joyner. Reggie gets to the heart of what leading small is all about and why partnering with parents is essential to a child's faith journey. And then straight after Reggie, we're going to hear from Tom Chef Shunas. We all know him as Chef, and Ashley did a fantastic interview with him. She really helped lead him through some key parts of the strategy. It's a lot of fun as well. Clearly, she was very taken by this because she added so much extra content herself. She was awesome. He'll be sharing the big ideas from his book, Lead Small. These ideas are so powerful that you can almost use them as the job description for your small group leaders. Now, here's a mini spoiler for you. Reggie tells us that what happens at home is more important than what happens at church. So take a listen, and then we'll be back with that interview between Ashley and the chef.
So there's strategy, family, message. Now let's talk about community. What do we mean by community? Well, remember we started this series by saying that no one has more potential to influence a child than a parent. And then we jumped to a value that almost seems like it's competing, but it's just as important when we said a parent is not the only relationship that a child needs. What we've understood over the last several years is both of those relationships are important, and they both play a different role in the life of a kid. But it's important for all of us, leaders and parents, to understand the value of community and putting consistent leaders in the lives of kids. I mean, I think I first understood that principle when my oldest daughter played basketball. There was this one game where she literally hit 8 3-pointers. In a single game. I was so ecstatic. I mean, I was jumping up and down. We got in the car and I was like, you're the best basketball player the world's ever known. You're unbelievable. This is just incredible. And of course, you know, I was kind of taking a little bit of the credit for myself, even though I wasn't a good basketball player, but somehow I was like, you know, you're just a great daughter. That means I'm a great dad. I don't know how it all worked. But in the middle of all that, she looked at me and she said, did the coach say anything to you? I'm thinking, what do you mean, did the coach say anything? I'm your father, and I thought you played a great game. And all of a sudden, it dawned on me that she was more concerned about what another adult thought than she was what I thought. That was kind of a defining moment for me as a parent, when I realized that my children actually need, crave, desire, approval, and direction in their life from other adults other than just me. And that as a parent, not only did I need to be okay with that, I needed to understand the power of that in the lives of my kids. And if I was going to be a smart father or a smart parent, I would actually think in terms of how to be strategic to invite other adults in the life of my kids. And as a church leader, if I put that hat on for just a second, one of the greatest gifts that I can actually give to a child or to a family is to put other adults in their lives that would say the same things, that would reinforce the same things that I say. So, when you elevate community, you do for a few what you wish you could do for more. It's this idea that you make a strategic decision as a leader that you can't do everything for everyone. So instead of giving up, you decide, but I can do something for a few. I can invest my life in a few people and make a difference in their life. And at the end of the day, that difference can be recognized exponentially because those people, if they take that same mindset, can invest in the lives of others, and we're basically reproducing influence in a number of different ways for the next generation. It's just a simple principle. It's the idea of leading small. We use the phrase lead small because we want everyone to think in terms of getting kids in a smaller context of relationships as you're moving them to the end in mind that we've decided you need to move them to. So how do you lead small? One of the best examples I can find in Scripture in the New Testament is what Jesus did. He literally decided that he would invest the 3 years of his ministry in a handful of disciples so they could understand what it meant to know him, and he could create a place where together they would be physically present in each other's lives and where it was safe enough for them to dialogue and discuss issues that were complicated. We talked about doubt a while ago, and we talked about giving margin in our message and sometimes making sure that we don't say everything so that kids can take that tension and use it for learning. This is the context where doubt, where questions, where difficult situations can be processed the best. Not in the context of a big room full of people, but in the context of a small group where relationships can really happen. When you elevate community, you make a deliberate decision to lead small. Not only that, when you elevate community, you cooperate with something God's already doing. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, have you ever stopped to think about this question? What makes someone grow spiritually? What is the catalyst that causes someone in their spiritual growth to move in a more positive direction in a relationship with God? Maybe the best way to ask the question is to ask it this way. What made you grow? What are the things in your life that caused you to grow spiritually? Have you ever stopped to consider that? If you were to write down the defining moments in your life and put them on a creative board, what would they be? The time that someone spoke into your life and built a relationship with you, the time when an event happened that was unexpected, or when you listened to someone speak and there was a truth that jumped out and you understood it for the first time. If we were to literally put the mile markers in place to talk about your spiritual journey, what would those mile markers look like? And I have a sneaky suspicion that after you looked at all those mile markers, and as you looked at the things that were catalysts for discipleship and spiritual growth in your life, in the center of all of that would be people. A significant list, maybe even a short list, of people who showed up at your life at the right time to lean into you, to speak into your life, to help you interpret things, but to walk along beside you as you, in your life, process faith and process life. The point is this. If that's true for you, why isn't it true for the next generation? And if that's the way God tends to grow us, then why don't we cooperate with what God is already doing in our lives by simply deciding we're going to invest in a few, we're going to lead small, we're going to be intentional about getting involved in people's lives for the sake of spiritual growth. So don't forget, when you elevate community, you do for a few. When you elevate community, you cooperate with something God is already doing because it seems to be the way God disciples and grows us with other people. And when you elevate community, you also do something that culture isn't doing. I mean, there's nothing really in culture that can match or compete with the idea of a small group leader in the context of a group of people that have a place to belong and people who believe in them. Now, I mean, you have clubs and you have teams and you have all kinds of things in culture that in some way create a sense of community, but we're talking about something different. We're talking about a very unique dynamic that exists between a handful of people and a consistent leader in their life so they can talk about issues and grow spiritually in their faith. And the reason I say that is because there's a temptation for us in church world to put all of our resources, all of our time, all of our energy into what we consider to be the production or the big room or the big group. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be excellent when it comes to quality and use every tool we can possibly use to engage a generation to understand these principles and to present and to teach in the most excellent ways we possibly can. But what I'm suggesting is this. As good as we can make that, it's still not a substitute for what happens in the context of community. As a matter of fact, I would go even further and I would say this, that you can spend thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars to create an experience for teenagers or for children. And culture will come along and outspend you 1,000 to 1 to create a better community and a more exciting experience. But what culture can't do that you can do is to recruit people who genuinely and authentically care about the spiritual future, about the faith of teenagers, to be in their life and to give them a sense of community and a sense of belonging, and people who literally believe in their potential to understand what it means to have a relationship with God. Culture can't and culture won't do that. That's why the church should play to their strength. That's why the church should decide if we have to economize, the last place we'll economize is in the context of a small group. And it doesn't matter if you're a large church. It doesn't matter if you're a mega church. It doesn't matter if you're a traditional church. It doesn't matter if you're a small church. This principle applies in a transferable way across all those styles of churches. So when you elevate community, you actually do something that culture isn't doing, and you also do something that parents can't do. I'm actually a parent of four children. Right now, they're young adults, and I remember when they transitioned from childhood to adolescence and into their teenage years. The phenomena that for me that was the most striking mark of moving into the teenage world was they cared more about what other adults thought than what I thought. They needed other adults in their life for a different reason than they needed me. But it was very important for me as a parent to realize and to understand why that was significant. Because as they transitioned toward adulthood, they needed other adults confirming, affirming, approving their life. And there was actually a sense in which they craved that. I remember riding down the road with my kids on a number of occasions, and I would have my son or one of my daughters say, you know, so-and-so said this week, and I just thought it was amazing. And they would quote one of our leaders or one of their small group leaders, and I would think, I've been saying that for 16 years. But the difference was someone else said it. Someone else was investing in their life, and they heard it in a different way, at a different time, at a different stage from someone else. And that reinforced it in an entirely different way. Because what I need as a parent and what every parent needs is for other adults to show up and to invest in our kids to do something that as parents we can't do because they need other voices besides just our voice. When we talk about the values for a small group leader, this is one of the values. And I want to go through those values really quick with you so you can get a context of what the job description is for a small group leader since this is such an important role. And one of those is simply this, to partner with families. Because again, if the family context is where faith is nurtured, it's important that we take these truths and we're saying the same things so that parents as well can be engaged. And this is a partnership between both sides of leaders and parents. That's how we think orange. And then we want every small group leader to understand that in their job description, there's this phrase that says, make it personal. We think it's important for you as a small group leader, the small group leaders who are part of your church or organization, to recognize that one of the most powerful things they can do to inspire faith in the next generation is to make sure that in their own life, this shows up, that they have engaged in a small group for themselves, that they are practicing some of these same principles themselves. And then there's the idea of being present. That means you're physically going to be there, that you're physically going to be spending time on their turf, that you're physically going to be available so that you're spending quality time with them to get change in your pocket, to earn the right, to show them and to connect them to their faith. We just have this fundamental belief that your faith and my faith are best understood in the context of relationships where we're connected with other people, and that outside of those connections, it's difficult to do faith alone. Owning your own faith and doing faith alone are two different things. And then last of all, as we mentioned earlier, that the role of the small group leader is to create a safe place. To clarify the faith of a teenager or a child by allowing them a safe place to be, a safe place to live, so that they can process what this means for them personally. And again, parents can create a safe place and parents can be present, but not in the same way a small group leader can. As a matter of fact, there are some conversations and some discussions that I absolutely am sure my children were able to have with other leaders in their life that was awkward for them to have with me. You say, does that mean I'm a bad parent? No. It just means that your role as a parent is different in the life of a child or a teenager than the role of a small group leader. And there comes a stage and a phase of life where they need to have those conversations with other leaders. I had three daughters. Can you imagine any one of my daughters coming up to me and saying, listen, I'm dating this guy and he's kind of making some moves on me that I don't want him to make, and I need you to help me as my dad to understand what to say to him and what to do? I'd probably say to my daughter, you don't need to worry about it. I'll talk to him. No, my daughter at that point needs someone with a different level of objectivity who doesn't own weapons to sit down and to talk, to navigate through these scenarios and situations without the emotional side that I would have attached to that. Why? Because this is a stage of their life when this has to become their own, and they have to have other people leaning into them and helping them understand it. It's just the idea of elevating community so that at the end of all of this, we're connecting everyone to a caring leader and a consistent group of peers so they can do life together in a different way. You see, it's important to think in terms of elevating community because there's a tendency for us to lead big and not lead small. There's a tendency for us to think the bigger the crowd, the more successful we are. And success is not really measured by how many people show up. Success is measured by what happens in the heart. And the reason it's so important to think in these terms is because ultimately, in your role and what you do, it would be very easy to think because people are showing up and you're teaching truth, that that's the measure of success. But there's a difference in teaching truth and discipling someone. And the reason you make a decision to do life with individuals, again, is because that's the way Jesus taught the 12. That's the way intuitively we know that God has designed us to learn about life, to learn about faith in the context of relationships. It's interesting. The scripture says you should speak the truth in love. That implies that if you're teaching a class, they might be learning information, but if you want them to learn truth in their heart, you've got to create a context, the right kind of context, the right kind of relationship, because there are only some truths that are understood in the context of genuine, authentic love.
Chef, thank you so much for being here with us today.
You bet.
I would love to jump right in if you would just kind of tell us how this book came about.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting story. It came about because of need. When I first started it at North Point, I was a groups director, which meant I was in charge of finding some guys to sit with students for a season for 3 years. That was our requirement. You basically walk with kids from sixth through eighth grade. So obviously those are hard to find. But when I found people crazy enough to have coffee, I'd sit down and I'd be thinking the whole time, I'd be trying to explain what a small group leader is. And there are people who grew up in churches and they're thinking Sunday school teacher, which is not what I was going for. People who didn't grow up in churches really didn't have a context for it. And I kept using the word like. You're kind of like a parent, but you're not. You're kind of like a teacher, but you're not. You're kind of like a friend, but you're not. And I just decided, you know, small group leader is an important job. They deserve to have their own job description. So we went to work on what it is a small group leader is without using the word like, if that makes sense.
That's awesome. So what is it?
Well, it's someone who chooses a few kids and walks with them for a season and influences them over time. In the book, we call them our few. And so it's kind of like, you know, I'm going to use like now, Sunday school, because you're at church a lot of times, or it's at least organized by the church, and you're walking with students for a period of time. It's much more of a mentor than it is a teacher. You ask many more questions than you answer, although you answer lots of questions.
So this book actually acts as a job description for the small group leaders, or is it for the ministry leader?
This one, Lead Small, is for the small group leaders themselves. And we wrote it so that children and middle schoolers and high schoolers, all those small group leaders could use the same book. We broke up the questions by kind of the grade you're working with and just created it.
I love that. So do you like buy this book for all of your small group leaders, or how?
Yeah, well, that's what we do. This is the first thing we really do to train them. And my favorite part about it is we have lots of small group leaders at our church. So, you know, one of the things with their culture is a culture is defined by the vocabulary. And so this is the base of the vocabulary that we talk about, the big ideas of being a successful small group leader over time.
That's awesome. So give us an overview of the book. What are the main topics you talk about, or the main things you train a small group leader on?
Sure. Well, the first thing we do is we just start with the real tension. And it's a real tension I think all churches should feel. And that is that we are losing, depending on the research you read, 40, 50, 60. I've seen 70% of kids who are going off to college or going off to that post-high school experiences, and they're walking away from church. And we're wondering why. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's they haven't had a true connection to the church. They haven't had a safe place to really process their faith. They're taking a childlike faith into adult into an adult and tough world. Mm-hmm. So we start with that tension. And then we really just kind of break it down for those folks who are crazy enough, for those folks who understand kind of the stewardship of it, that if they're going to walk with a kid, walk with kids for a season, they need to keep some big ideas in mind. And so we broke it down into really five big ideas, and we got those ideas from small group leaders. Mm-hmm. We put them around the table and we asked them the question, if you were to tell a small group leader one thing, what would it be? And they talked and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. But at the end of the day, it all kind of boiled down to five big ideas.
And can you share those five ideas with us?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I'd love to. The first one really is be present. The number one spiritual gift of a small group leader is the gift of showing up. And right. So that's important. You've got to be in the same room. You've got to be with kids over time in order for them to feel safe and then to ask their questions.
Okay.
The second one is, I think, the more I do this, the most important thing, to create a safe place. Create a safe place.
What does that mean?
It means lots of things. It means, just think about you as a teenager, and if you had a really big question about faith, and you know you couldn't go to mom and dad because they're going to freak out. Mm-hmm. They're going to think you're losing your faith. But you should have big questions about right. faith, and maybe even have doubts. One of the best quotes I've ever heard is that doubts don't hurt your faith. Unprocessed doubts do, or questions don't hurt your faith. It's unprocessed
That's awesome.
Questions over time. Isn't that good?
Yeah.
And so you're creating a place where a kid can ask some tough questions mm-hmm. or tell you some tough things about themselves. So a lot of times they're hiding the fact that their parents aren't getting along and they're going through that alone. And that's killing their faith through this mm-hmm. process. A lot of times, you know, they're hiding a habit that they might have. You know, for us, we work with middle schoolers. That's kind of the first time a kid realizes there's something unlovable about themselves. And they tend to turn...
Wait, can you say that again? Because I think that's so important.
Yeah. Well, for middle schoolers, it's the first time in their lives that they really realize that there's something unlovable about themselves.
That has to happen in a safe place.
Yeah, and they're thinking internally, they're developing their metacognition, their inner conversation, and they're asking themselves some questions that scare them to death. And you're trying to create a safe enough place that they can bring those ideas outside, because those secrets will grow in the dark. But if we bring them out and expose them to the light, to somebody who loves them, to someone who can show them grace, to someone who can lead them to, you know, real answers for their real questions, we think their faith's going to grow. We know their faith's going to grow.
So we've got be present, create a safe place.
That's
what
right.
are the last three?
Partner with parents. Unless you want to pick them up for lacrosse practice every day, you know, right. they've got way more hours in the day than you do. So you partner with parents and you give, it's really an amazing gift. You give parents another adult in their kid's life. They'll speak to them.
One of the things I love the most about the ministry you lead is you really, really like repeat the fact that the parents are the number one source of influence on a child's
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
And you always set them up to be the hero. And I think that makes such a difference. Like when you partner with parents compared to trying to set yourself up to be the hero.
Right. Right.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, parents are, whether we like it or not, the number right. one spiritual influence, good or bad. So the fourth one is make it personal. Make it personal. And that's the whole idea that your example is going to be the thing that speaks the loudest in small group. We tell parents all the time to make it personal. I know. How about it? We tell parents all the time that if, you know, the number one thing you can do is be the adult you want your child to become. Well, that is
Wait, hold on. Say that again.
Yeah.
Say that again.
So this is the answer you give every parent that comes to you and asks you for a book or asks you for, you know, something, and just say, I can get you all that sort of stuff. But the number one piece of parenting advice we have for you is to be the adult you want your child to become, to have the quiet time you want your child to have someday, to have the marriage you want your child to have someday, to have the community you want your child to have someday. You just need to
I'm gut checking over here.
It hurts every time I say it. Cause, I've got work to do as a parent, you know, but the same is true in the small group, that as an adult, you're someone they're looking towards or looking to, and they're getting an example of it. And be yourself, especially the older the kids get, the more they can detect that you're just being someone else. And if mm-hmm. you're with them over time for a whole season, whether it's a year with children or 3 years in middle school or 4 years in high school, you don't need to be managing your identity. Just be who God made you to be. Be an example of that to the kids so that they can, as they're sorting out who God made them to be, that they get comfortable with that and they work that out.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
It's getting our leaders there, right?
It's simple. And it's not easy.
It is right? not easy. No. And I have a lot of questions about that, but I'm going to wait to ask them so that you can finish the fifth idea.
Okay. The fifth idea is really move them out, is that we don't want our kids just to come to church. We want them to become the church. And I think at the end of the day, when we talk about the big tension at the beginning that kids are walking away from the church, is because they've never been the church. They've gone to church. And now they've, but what we also know is that when, once they become the church, that's kind of the number one thing that keeps them connected as they head off from high school into the rest of their lives. So if you can get them to serve with children, if you can get them to serve somewhere on Sunday, go on a mission trip. I know that's a big thing for us. We love to connect our kids to missions. I mean, our kids are growing up, you know, in suburban Atlanta, and it's really tough for our kids to really know what need is. Mm-hmm. So to get them out of this country and out of the groomed grass lawns of this area and see real need, it's just huge. And we're moving them out into the world.
Yeah, I love that. And I also love the whole idea in this one that you want more than one influential leader in the kid's life. I mean, I just experienced this moving away. When I moved to Atlanta, some of the students that I was pouring into in middle school and high school, I was so glad they had other adults in their life.
That's right.
Besides their parents and besides me, so that when I moved to a different state, they weren't like, oh, I don't have anybody now.
That's right. That's right. Well, the older a kid gets, the more their relationships depend on them as much as it is the other person, you know? So they're going to choose people to connect to. It's one reason we changed our strategy with our small groups. We have small groups of, you know, a group of kids, and we put two adults and a high school kid in every group, which gives them three opportunities to connect. They might connect to all of them, they might connect to one of them, but it gives them an opportunity. So we really wanted to tell small group leaders, hey, the win isn't that they connect to you. The win is that they connect to another adult, so that if you see them connecting with the other adult, push them toward that. And as they head off to high school, let's prep them for a new small group leader. When I was a small group leader at the church, before I worked for the church, I had a kid in my group in middle school, and his mom was a great mom. His dad had kind of bailed on the family. And what I didn't know is I was part of her master plan, that she was putting male influences with her son as he grew up. And so when I went to his graduation 4 years after I was done being a small group leader, I stood there with an upstreet leader, or his children's leader. I was standing there as middle school leader, and I stood next to his high school leader. And here were three men who had invested in this kid over time, and that mom had, you know, strategically put that together. Well, why don't we do that for every kid as a church? It just makes sense. That is discipleship at the end of the day.
So I would imagine a lot of our listeners, there's a couple things that you said that I want to go back to, because I'd imagine they'd be saying, how in the world do you get somebody to commit for an entire season, 6th, 7th, 8th grade? For some people, maybe it's 6th through 12th grade that ask them to commit.
Yeah.
And how in the world do you get two adults and a high school student in every single small group? Like, where do you even start?
Well, when we made that decision, we didn't have enough adults for one small group leader, but we just sat down and said, what does a kid need? What does a kid need? What does a kid need? If we could do anything, which is a great way to plan, if you could do anything for a kid, what would it be? Or if you could only do one thing for a kid, what would it be? And we just said, we would put a Jesus-loving adult to walk with them over time. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we said, okay, let's make that the core of our strategy. And then when we realized it, that one adult was missing for a wedding, and we were mixing groups up all the time, and we were having to put two groups together, and we were just kind of messing it up, and we were asking ourselves, how do we give this kid more consistency? How do we give these groups more consistency? And the answer was, if we had two adults, we could keep groups, you know, consistent. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it's been awesome. And the other thing we learned was, when you ask someone to serve for 3 years, to show up every Sunday and give us 2 weekends a year, which is what we ask, they flinch. And then you say, but you have a co-leader. And a lot of them go, oh, good. I'm good. I'm good with that. Right. We had no idea how much that mattered. But when it comes to you ask, how do you get them to do it? Well, the first thing you've got to do is ask. I have so many people that come to me and say, our folks at our church would never do that. And I always say, have you asked?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, no, they wouldn't do it. I'm like, the first step is to make the ask. And you will be amazed at who shows up, and you will be amazed at the quality of who shows up, because those are people who get it. Those are people who know what it takes. Those are people who can probably look back into their past and name somebody that was a major character in their lives, or they've looked back in their past and they've realized that's what they were missing and they've showed up to fill that gap.
I think that's so important in a pitch to a small group, future small group leader. Oh, yeah. Is you're either going to do it for one of two reasons. Either someone did it for you or nobody did it for you.
Yes.
And getting them to understand and like revisit that in their own experience.
Right.
So important.
And we're their heroes, right?
Right.
And you have to make the ask like that. Never use the word need. You know, like, hey, here's what we're looking. We're looking for some heroes to step in the lives of kids over a season and change the trajectory of their lives.
Right. So I remember like the first time you talked to me about all of these ideas, because I was coming from a church background where I was inheriting the program. I was inheriting the people. I was inheriting the culture of it. And here I come with these ideas that you've given me, and you've helped me translate them from like the education world, since we were both teachers, to the ministry world in this whole strategic plan. And I was so excited about it. And then it's like, okay, well, what about if your whole church isn't on board? Because I can imagine a lot of the listeners are in the same boat that I was in.
Sure, sure. I think the good news is most people are structurally sound. I mean, they're structurally set up for group. You probably have Sunday schools. You probably have smaller classes. Well, you're already on your way.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of ways, you can start to make these changes. And, you know, some things you have to ask permission for. Some things are just, it just makes sense. But the big thing, you know, if you ask somebody to walk with your kids for a season, you have long-term volunteers, you are on your way in a lot of ways. You don't have to challenge the system. You just start making good decisions for the sake of kids.
Yeah.
Let's get some long-term volunteers in place.
One of the things that I noticed spending time on your staff was how North Point really does this. It's so interesting the way they recruit small group leaders, where it's not necessarily as much as of an ask to the entire church, like, hey, we need this, as much as it is pouring into the current leaders and making people who are already fans raving fans, and like the raving fans bring those kind of small group leaders in. And I just think that's so different than anything I've seen done before.
Yeah, I think it is different. I think it's the best way to do it at the end of the day, is that we get our best leaders from our best leaders. One of my favorite things we do is we do boot camp for sixth graders.
Mm-hmm.
And we get our new volunteers together, and we build our sixth grade groups, and they meet their small group leader, and they're together for a few weeks, and then we whisk them off for a weekend camp for just them.
Mm-hmm.
And for many of these sixth graders, it's their first time away. They're with this, you know, new small group leader. And we get about a year worth of relationship over about 48 hours by putting them through just a huge adventure. But my favorite part is to watch the small group leaders over the weekend and then listen to them on the Sunday morning meeting, because they have felt the weight of what they signed up for. Some people signed up because they feel like they should, which is, it's great to get a lead on somebody to feel like they should, but now they've felt the weight of what God's doing through them for a group of students. And all of a sudden, they're not people I need to put through an orientation. They are people who are dying to get more information about how they can be a better leader, because they feel the weight of what God's doing through them.
I love that. And you guys leverage that really well.
Well, I hope so. Well, thank you.
I think so.
I'm just the stat that amazes me about our church is not necessarily numbers and attendance and all that sort of thing. For me, when we do Walking Wisely and 97% of our leaders show up, or 90, you know, I'm always like, oh my gosh. So they have felt the weight of it. They know, you know, they know the kids are going to miss something if they don't show up. And so they do. They understand how important their job is.
So you just mentioned a number, 97%. And this is another thing that I've learned from you, is the way you measure things.
Yeah.
And I think this is so unique and also really, really important, because you taught me how to measure things in a way that no one had taught me before. And it's measuring, like, it's the whole lead small mindset, right? It's measuring what percent of my leaders are actually coming, and what percent of the small group is actually showing up.
Right, right. That's it. I mean, well, that's how we measure if we're successful with a camp. You know, the advantage we have over big church is that we know who should be there. And so we can use that number to figure out what percentage of the people are showing up and how often they are and all that good stuff. So we've set some goals that we want. When we set the boot camp goal, we said we want half of our kids to show up. Because we are thinking about, if I have a small group and at least half of my kids show up, and I can move the ball down the field relationally with at least half of my small group, that really gets things going for the rest of the 3 years that they're together. Well, we hit 50% pretty early, and now we're close to 80% of the kids on roll come to boot camp because year after year we've kind of perfected this camp. It's gotten a reputation. Big brothers tell their little brothers about not all of it because there's hopefully some surprises they keep, and our kids are showing up, and it works great.
I think if I could rewind my professional career, now that I know what I know, I feel like another thing I learned spending time on your staff was the difference between a lead pastor who is so for the whole mindset versus not necessarily a leader who isn't for it, but right. just somebody who like understands it, but isn't verbally active. Like one of the things I love about Andy is he talks about middle school ministry specifically, yeah, which is what we're talking about from the main stage. And he'll get emotional about it. He'll be passionate about it. He'll provide budget that you need for what you want to do in your vision. And I feel like for our listeners, that would be the place that I would start because I've learned it's really hard to create momentum if the momentum isn't coming from the top.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, for our listeners, that would be the first step is just having that conversation with your leadership is getting them on board so that you can implement this whole lead small strategy.
Right, right. I think it's important to get them on board. I think I wouldn't underestimate what you can do from where you are as well, because you may be able to lead in the momentum. I know of a church in Texas that a college kid and a high school kid run their middle and high school programs. And they're brothers, and they are the growth engine for the church right now.
Love
because
that.
They've basically plugged in a lot of these principles. Their programming is super simple, but that relational side, the kids are growing. It's the growth engine of the church. And it's I would love for your leadership to get it. I would love for your leadership to talk about the importance of middle school ministry, not just the words, but the way he talks about them is pretty interesting.
Makes you want to be part of it.
It makes you want to be part of it, which helps with our recruiting for sure. But you don't have to convince everybody before you can start.
Ooh, that's good stuff.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hey, I'm looking forward to diving more into all these ideas.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You bet.
Well, that was absolutely fantastic. Ashley did a great job. I loved so much of what Chef said. I think probably my favorite part of the whole podcast was when Reggie was talking about de-escalating influence. I know that as a dad of teenage girls, my influence with them is starting to decline, and I want to make sure that they are surrounding themselves with people who are a positive influence, whether it's in their personal life, whether it's at school, or especially if it's at church. Well, I hope you got a lot out of this. I want to thank you all for listening to the Think Orange podcast and being part of this really from the beginning. We're just getting started, and we can't wait for more episodes where we talk about ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation. While today's episode could be a great topic to share with your small group leaders and even get together as a group and talk about partnering with parents and what that might look like in your church. What are some of the wins happening? What are some of the problems arising? So go ahead and send them to this podcast so they can listen and they can have a conversation of their own. All you need to do is go to the thinkorangepodcast.com to get more information. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please, please, please go ahead and hit that subscribe button on iTunes, Google Play, the Stitcher app, or wherever it is that you're listening to these podcasts. Hey, and one more thing that I really want to encourage you to do. If you are not checking out the show notes of this podcast, then you are missing out on half of the fun. This is where we share all the content, where we have tweetable items, where we have extra information and links to all sorts of other things that will help make this podcast come alive. So please go and check it out at thinkorangepodcast.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.